Yes, Honest Actors is back with brand new episodes every Friday. To help me continue releasing new episodes without a sponsor, or to say thanks for your favourite old ones, click the support link in the episode description. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. It's a one-off, feeling generous, good deed for the day sort of thing. Think of it as bumping into me and buying me a drink. To find out more, click the support link. Thanks for listening, and enjoy the show.
Yeah, mine's a large red.
I hate those guys.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So this is sort of, my name is Arshu Ali, and this is the Honest Actors podcast.
Hi, my name is Jonathan Harden, and you're listening to episode 7 of series 2 of the Honest Actors podcast, sponsored by TodayTix. If you want great offers on theatre tickets, access to day seats on your mobile, and exclusive front row lotteries, you need TodayTix, the ticketing app that lets you see theatre differently. To get tickets with no queues and no fuss, download TodayTix now on the App Store and Google Play. Don't forget, if you enjoyed this episode or have enjoyed previous episodes of the podcast, to leave a rating and a review on iTunes. Also, you can follow the podcast on Twitter at Honest Actors, like the page on facebook.com/honestactors, and you can also view some blogs and sign up for the mailing list at www.inanything.com. Now though, it's time for episode 7 with Arshu Ali. Enjoy.
Let's start with an easy one. How did you get into acting?
Oh, how did I get into it? When I was sort of like 16, I was all set to do like a sports journalism. That's what I wanted to do because I'm a big football fan, big cricket fan. So that's what I was doing. But then looking back at it now, when I was sort of 15, you know, when you sort of have to pick GCSEs, I did pick drama. But I think I picked it because I knew it was going to be essentially a free period, which it was. But it must have been there because that was fun, like, you know, sort of coming up with little sketches and things just to make your mates laugh. And then at college, I decided to go with it because a lot of my friends were doing it. And I just thought, it'd be nice to kind of, because I'm doing such different things from them, it'd be nice to be in a lesson with them, you know. So I chose drama. And that's where it sort of started. Like, I was quite lucky that I had a really, really good teacher, really, really encouraging, supportive, inspirational teacher who sort of, you know, pushed me because she saw something. Whereas, you know, obviously when you're sort of sat, you know, in English lit, it's sort of, you know, you don't necessarily get that voice in your ear. And it just wasn't as fun anymore, sitting down writing. Like, I still write now for various people, but it just... I guess it was validation at that age as well.
Yeah. You know. So, if it's effortless, as it would seem to be, if you're saying it was a free period, I'd say there are a lot of teenagers for whom drama isn't a free period because it's that bit where you have to stand up and talk out loud in front of your peers, right?
Yeah.
So that assumption alone says something about you that perhaps you were into that then at that age.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't afraid to sort of speak my mind or, you know, speak in front of people, like. School for me was basically almost like stand-up comedy. That's how I survived, you know, because I wasn't sort of like, you know, because it was quite a rough school I went to. Like 2 years after I left, it closed down, but not before it became like this Alcatraz. Like it was really sort of like, I know I don't sound it now, but that's drama school that's done that to me. But like, but it was like a sort of rough inner city school. So that was a way of surviving because it was always sort of like break time just meant a fight. It was just fight time. It was no like, oh, just go and sit with your mates and sort of like, you know, have fun. It was sort of like, oh, who's fighting who? So the way for me to survive was sort of being the funny guy.
It took like, you outside of that.
Yeah, it sort of took me outside, but also sort of kept me safe because a lot of people valued that. You know, a lot of all the big guys, or you know, the hard guys were kind of like, oh, yeah, that, you know, that's Arshu. Oh, he makes us, you know, makes us like laugh. You know, he's a really cool guy. Oh, don't mess with him, don't mess with him. So that's kind of how, like, I survived. I say so, it sounds really bad. Like, it wasn't, yeah, like, it was bad, but it wasn't, like, bad, bad.
Listen, it's fair to say that at that age, in that context, there was no sense of other people were becoming actors. Like, I imagine didn't have any alumni who were famous actors.
No.
Likewise, I imagine, from what you're saying, there weren't any actors in your family. It wasn't like,
no,
I like drama, dad's an actor, I'm obviously going to be an actor.
Absolutely.
So
not.
At what point does it become something that actually is a profession, or potentially a profession?
I think in the final year of college, that's where it suddenly got serious, and that's where my teacher, she applied on my behalf almost to East 15 Acting School. That was the only place she applied to, because she knew of it and she knew of the kind of acting that I liked, that I'd sort of cottoned onto, and she knew that that would be the perfect place. So I had no idea about all these other places like RADA and Lambda and all that kind of stuff. I had no idea, absolutely no idea. So that was the only place I applied to. Didn't even think that there was a possibility that I couldn't get in. I just went for the audition, the day-long audition or whatever, and just had fun, just kind of enjoyed it and prepared a few speeches, blah, blah, blah. Just all the while assuming that this is where I'm going, this is where I'm going, I'm here, I better look for a place, you know, all that would be fun. And luckily I did get in, and I was like one of the youngest in the year as well.
Was it something you wanted though, in that kind of passive route towards that audition, and assuming you would get an offer, was there internally a sense that, is this what I want to do? An uncertainty?
I don't know. I think at that point, it was fun. The whole thing was fun. There wasn't really seriousness attached to it. There wasn't really anything kind of like, oh, if you continue on this path, that's it. You know, you're going to have to really go through it. I think it was just fun, and it was a way of being creative, you know, without sort of having a paintbrush in your hand, or, you know, being able to play an instrument. It was just a different way of being creative, and obviously I had sort of a lot of stuff I needed to kind of get out, and it was the perfect avenue for that.
So if for you there was no seriousness attached, was it the same for your family? Did they go along in that kind of journey of fun, or was there a moment where they sat you down and said, like, are you sure you don't want to, you know, be a journalist? Or
no, I think because I come from quite a big family as well, it's sort of easy to kind of not get lost, but it's a big family, you know, it's kind of, oh, what's so-and-so doing, so by the time they'd realise that, whoa, he's moving out and he's going to live
London?
In Essex,
he's gone,
you know, so by that time I think they'd kind of gone, oh, right, he's serious about it. But I think the fact that letters that were being sent home were addressed from the University of Essex, I think my mum just sort of went, oh, right, yeah, no, because he's at university. You know, this is actually a degree. You know, I mean, to me, it was, what, a degree? Like, I've never once ever said to someone, oh, yeah, I've got a degree in that. Who would do that?
So I don't normally ask questions about drama school, and this will be the first time, because I think, well, I'm not going to ask. let me ask the question first, all right, before you start doing that. Because I think it's fascinating, the idea of somebody being in drama school and the whole thing being fun. So the question is, does it shift when you meet your peers? Or if it doesn't shift when you first enter, at what point do you start to think, oh, this is there is seriousness attached to this? Or do you still think, no, it's just all
you? I think it got worse when I met my peers. I think everybody was there, and it felt like a massive jolly. And then it suddenly got serious sort of in the last 2 months of the 3 years. I think that's when sort of everyone went, oh, right, yeah, shit, this is what we're doing. Oh, oh, man, oh, you know, that it's sort of, it was that late, I think.
Okay, so you enter into the industry, and do you remember then what was the first job?
Oh, God. The first job, I think it was a bit on Trial and Retribution. That's not going now, I don't think.
Don't think so.
No. It was a bit on that. And I remember how weird it was. because they don't tell you anything about that. Like East 15 certainly didn't tell me anything about what it's like to be on a set. It was all theatre based, which I was glad of at the time, but like it felt.
So what were the big learning curve moments? Oh, the big
huge learning curves, man. Like even now, like still, I don't know. Like it's embarrassing sometimes because I don't. Like if a DP's talking about a size, and he doesn't go like that with his hands, you know, make the box in front of your face. If he doesn't do that, I don't know what the hell, you know, the shot is. Do you know what I mean? I never sort of ever sat down and sort of asked someone that. And also it feels like everybody else knows that and you're the only one who doesn't. So, that yeah, I remember just turning up on that set and just being like...
So seriousness, just, enter seriousness.
Enter seriousness.
So this, we've got to the point where you've been through drama GCSE, you've been through college with your mates, you've been through 3 years of a degree at East 15, you get your first job in Trial and Retribution, and you realise, holy shit, this is a real thing. People, this is serious. So was there a tension there? Were you the guy, were you still trying to be the funny guy in the playground? Or did you just instantly settle into, uh-oh, I better get my act together?
Yeah, completely that. There was no time to try and win anyone over with humour or anything like that. You know what I mean? That's gone.
Thank God,
that
we wouldn't be having this conversation.
No. I think that whole thing kind of died right there.
Buy tickets to the best theatre in London the new way. With the TodayTix app, getting great offers and access to exclusive tickets has never been easier. With TodayTix Rush, you won't have to queue at the box office for hours to get day seats, and you can access big savings with their lotteries for shows like Kinky Boots and The Bodyguard. Download TodayTix, the theatre ticket app, from the App Store and Google Play, and see theatre differently.
So, as you'll know, we don't talk a lot about jobs,
good,
but I do offer people an opportunity to identify one, and I always... say that it should be one that you're most proud of. The idea of this is that we identify you for the people who don't know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Without getting into great detail, you can let me know the kind of work or a job you've done that's the kind of thing you'd like people to know you for or that you're most proud of.
Do you mean in terms of me being in it as a selfish thing or as a whole, as in like, I'm really proud of this job because we all did this.
You define it as you will. I think if I was to answer this question now, I would have two very different answers, probably along the lines that you're talking. So if you want to, I'll bend the rules because they are my
nice
rules.
Good.
And I'll allow you two then.
Okay. I think personally the most satisfying thing I've been in was a thing called Complicit. And the reason why, because it was TV that took time. TV doesn't take time anymore. TV doesn't enjoy stillness. It doesn't enjoy air. It doesn't enjoy lack of dialogue and exposition. So that, for me, even though the role wasn't necessarily the most, you know, sort of forward-thinking role in a way, because essentially it was a guy like, is he or is he not a terrorist? And I don't like being associated with anything like that. But there was something in that job that sort of, I saw an opportunity, and there was a certain ambiguity in that role that I thought, oh, I could, you know, spin it and also enjoy just being in something where there's a conversation for about 15 minutes. Just me and another actor, we're just sitting down, talking, and cameras are on. Like, for me, that's heaven. Like, as soon as, if I'm on a job and I know that we've got some sit down talky scenes, I love it. It's so much fun though. And I know it sounds like it's just so much fun for the actors, but when you watch it, like some of the stuff in Line of Duty, like, you know, that I think, yeah, that should be the second one, that the thing I've been most proud of, as in like the whole thing and being a part of it, just a small part of it, was Line of Duty. Like, that is another show where people sit down and they talk, and it's just fascinating.
Okay, so moving on then, we'll never speak about work again.
Yeah, good.
We will, however, speak about the process by which we get work, so auditions. We're currently sat in Spotlight.
Yes. Actually, I need to renew my Spotlight, so it's a good way.
Yeah, good reminder, that's why we had it. I mentioned your name and they were like, oh, him.
Oh yeah, him, yeah, he never pays.
Yeah. Well, no, it's kind of, I suppose the question is, do you enjoy coming to this building? Do you enjoy the process of, you know, going in, checking in, sitting outside a room, waiting, and then going in and doing a bit of acting?
No, I just feel like it's the worst way of getting quite an important department sorted. Like, why? Like, by that logic, why aren't we testing a, you know, sort of bringing a sound guy in here and getting him to record a mug hitting a table and seeing if he's done it right? Do you know what I mean? Like, why? I don't know. It's such a strange thing. It's different when you're given a fair crack at something. And I think my definition of a fair crack at something is you're given the material in enough time. It's not secret, it's not NDA attached, all this kind of a la mode stuff, you know, this Vogue stuff of everything being secret. It can be like a rubbish, like TV procedural sort of cop drama, and they'll sort of withhold everything. And I don't understand why you do that. Like, what, it's, you're not giving an actor a fair chance. It's sort of...
My thing at the minute is whenever you put confidential on a script.
Yeah.
And I think...
Because I tell all my mates.
If there's anything... Also, if I'm on the way to an audition here, I have to get the tube.
Yeah.
I would like to read that script on the tube, but I can't take it out if it's stamped confidential, because the one thing that will make me and everybody else on public transport take interest in a document is massively written all over every page, confidential. Because instantly you go, oh, what's that? Whereas if it didn't mark confidential, no one would care. Everybody in the tube would assume that's an actor, that's probably a shit part in a shit show, and I have no interest in it. Mark it confidential, however.
Like, who's this guy? Wait, I know him. I've seen him in something. Yeah, right. Yeah, it's funny. Like, I can't think of a single time where I've enjoyed an audition.
So have you ever come out thinking, it went well? I wasn't looking forward to that, but you know what? I did okay.
Never.
Really? So you go in going, this is going to be terrible. You leave going, this is going to be terrible. And then the phone call comes to offer it and you're like, oh, that's a surprise. I was terrible.
Yeah, they do tend to be surprises. I guess it's a funny one, because it's the ones that you really want to do that you don't end up doing. And the ones you don't care about are the ones that, are, you know, the phone call comes in for. But no, I never go in and go, oh yeah, smash that out of the park. Eat that. You surely can't choose anyone else. No, I never really.
So do you come
out
and agonise, or do you just come
No way, man. No way. I think sort of in the first year of doing all that, first couple of years, I used to do that. I used to beat myself up quite a lot. Like, I squandered a lot of really good opportunities early on. Like, really, really squandered them. But only because I didn't know what I was doing. And I still don't know what I'm doing.
So what do you mean when you say squandered? Do you mean not prepared?
No, just not sort of been savvy, I guess. Like, an audition is more than just reading the lines. Do you know what I mean? Like, it is. An audition is more than just giving your reading of the character. It's kind of the off stuff as well. Like, you know, oh, how charming are you? Oh, you know, how lovely do you look? You know what I mean? It's kind of, there's a lot of stuff that's around it that you can kind of work on in a really cynical way. Like, I don't know, brush your hair. Like, for me, like, I'm allergic to brushes. When I talk to other actors who are a little bit more, I don't know, what's the word, like, high profile or whatever.
Yeah.
I always make a point of sort of trying to extract from them, like, what their kind of, not what their process is, but what they're like. What, do they do anything different?
Yeah.
It just basically sounds like, half the time, if you go in and you're an absolute, see you next Tuesday, you get the job, because you've sort of done something other than reading the lines well. You've left something in the room. You've sort of done something to them.
So, on the other side of that, when you've gone out, you've waited for 2 days, 5 days, 2 weeks, sometimes a month, and you've got a call to say, listen, it hasn't gone your way.
Mm-hmm.
Classic industry.
Yeah, it didn't go your
euphemism.
Way. Yeah, exactly.
Way. What's the most ridiculous feedback you've ever been given?
Oh, God.
Or is there a refrain that you often hear that you think, oh, not that again?
I guess a lot of the time it's always, oh, no, he's not. Yeah, we really like him. He's great, but he's just not got the profile that we want. that's happened a few times where I've kind of gone like, well, how do you get the profile if someone isn't willing to kind of roll the dice?
Profile,
horrible. That's what I mean. It's really like there's this. My whole perspective on this whole industry has changed for the good, it feels like, because now you can sort of see it for what it is. You can see the seedy sort of underbelly of it. It's a great industry, like, don't get me wrong, like, you know, I love it, but you need to see some of the ugliness and some of the kind of more cynical aspects of it, and just see them for what they are and kind of remain philosophical about it. I don't know, like,
okay, well then. do you have people you consider rivals? Like, you have people who you walk into, say, here in Spotlight, you're sitting outside and you see someone sit down and you think, oh, for fuck's sake, not him again. Or do you see a name on a list and think, oh, he'll get it?
No, I don't ever see people where I sort of feel threatened. I don't know, it's strange, like that whole thing of feeling threatened or feeling like you're going to lose a job to a name on a list. I've never, ever had that kind of mentality. It's always kind of, but then it's weird as well being an Asian actor, because obviously the pool is a lot smaller, so you're really only ever in the jacuzzi with three other people. Do you know what I mean? Like that's
it's a jacuzzi of Asian actors. There's a
it pretty much is like that would be a really awkward jacuzzi session.
There's a short film in that.
There is. It's a really, really painful comedic short film in that. Yeah.
So, stepping out of the jacuzzi, when you get the call and you get the gig, do you start to panic about things?
As soon as I get that call, then I start getting the shovel out and just smash it into that script and start digging. That's where it sort of becomes like, you know, you're there and you're ready to run the 100 metres, and that's the gun that, you know, has just been fired, and now you can get on with it. It's not like, oh no, should I run? Do I want to run? Oh, maybe I can't run anymore. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, no, I'm ready. You've given me the green light.
It sounds ridiculously self-indulgent, actually.
You give me the green light. Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's do this. Like, thank you for getting the worst part of the job out of the way.
Do you believe in big breaks? Have you ever felt like you've been in the midst of one?
I've not been in the midst of one, I don't think. But
felt like it at the time? Like, say, for example, Line of Duty. You get Line of Duty, you think, oh, shit, this is going to open doors, Archer. This is.
Oh, no, for me, you're talking about, personally. Oh, yeah. No. But I believe in them because, obviously, that's the way the industry works. You have, you know, someone who can just come from nowhere, you know, and explode because they've made a couple of good decisions and they've committed to whatever they were doing and the stars have aligned. And yeah, I believe in that.
So good decisions implies an element of control there. And a lot of people I've spoken to have kind of dismissed the idea that we have any control over what we do. So
yeah,
that's significant. Just the very fact that you identify that as being part of a big break is a series of good decisions. What do you mean by that?
I'm only talking personally. For me, the decisions are in, do I want to be a part of this particular possibly stereotypical work?
Do I want to be part of that? So you've always made decisions like that?
Yeah.
Since you graduated, you've said already you don't want to be, you know, part of like those kind of parts which are basically Asian guy playing a terrorist.
Yeah.
So that must limit.
Yeah.
Given the industry and the way that you said isn't always forward thinking in terms of the roles that, you know, people give or that are created for actors in your particular hot tub, that's going to limit things hugely for you. So how do you reconcile that? Does it ever become difficult and you think, fuck, I'll maybe do this one terrorist because I need to pay bills?
No.
I mean, I hate to reduce it down.
But that's what it essentially is. Like, that's what kind of happens. Like, I'll go weeks and weeks and weeks. Weeks and weeks and weeks without a single phone call or single anything, because, you know, my agent who I'm with, they'll know that that's a waste of time.
Don't even bother.
But there's so much of it, and there's so many other people who are willing to do it.
So why are you not willing to do it? Like, why? What? I mean, for me, when I moved to London, I for various reasons, said I didn't want to play priests and terrorists. Mm-hmm. And it was less political for me and more to do with career. Like, I didn't want to just play Irish guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, why, in your case, why not terrorists?
I think it was actually David Oyelowo gave me a really good quote, because he was sort of going through the same thing at the time as well. He basically said, just be part of the solution and not the problem. And that meant, don't do those roles. Try and stay away from them and try and do the opposite. And I think that's like the perfect advice to give to any sort of, what do they call it, BAME actor, you know, that kind of horrible
acronym. How do you feel about that? Because I hate using it.
Yeah, it's horrible. Like, I've read a script and it was a good script, and then it came to the part, and hitherto it had been like, you know, Tony, white, 20s, good looking. And then it came to this character, and all it said was BAME in brackets next to the name. That's it. And
the character was black and minority ethnic.
As in, we just need anyone for this.
Just this is our token. Might have well been called Token.
Exactly. You know, and it's like, wow. It's get this out of my hands. I don't ever want to see.
Do you find
like
yourself?
Ever again.
Do you ever? I mean, I'm assuming this is my ignorance, so forgive it for what it's worth. But I always think it's important to ask the questions. Do you find yourself reading for many leads where the ethnicity is not defined? Or are we not at that stage yet?
I'm not convinced we're at that stage yet. We're not there. Like, an agent obviously will, you know, want to push you and want to put you forward for things that are different, of course. And a casting director, if they've got the license to, they'll want to bring in anyone they want to bring in.
Yeah.
And that's a perfect world on that side, but there's just not enough of it. Like, that's a very sort of rare occasion.
The further you get towards the people who make the decisions, the less imagination there seems
but,
to be.
Yeah, and also there's a huge sort of absence of writers who are from those particular backgrounds, who are writing about things that aren't overtly informed by their upbringings. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I see things like, there was a thing on TV about honour killings, and that just makes my heart sink. But then there's also a positive way of looking at that, as in, like, that's a young Asian writer who's got, you know, one sort of, you know, he's got a foothold there. So surely, you know, hopefully he'll start to move away from that and, you know, whatever. But when I see things like that, it really, really makes me think, oh God, it's sort of one step forward, one step backwards.
What's the longest you've gone without work?
You've actually caught me at the perfect time, because I've just done a job, but before that I'd been out for over a year.
And I mean, it's hard to know exactly, but how much of that do you think is down to the fact that you are exercising a political choice over the parts that you play?
I think it's probably 70-30%, 30% on my side. I mean, that was, you know, that was Siberia and then some.
Right.
Like, that was, I was completely unprepared for that. Like, massively unprepared for that.
Because you'd had a fairly good few years leading up to that.
Yeah, but also I knew that there was, you know, gaps of months, you know, between things. Mm-hmm. But that was my own choice. I've decided not to star in some film where Bruce Willis punches me in the face, or, you know, I'm some bad guy in Spooks. You know what I mean? Like, I stay away from that, so you're going to have to sit on your hands.
Yeah.
That's the choice you've made, so, you know.
But you don't expect it to be that long.
Yeah, I didn't expect it to be that long, but that was sort of, the phone completely stopped.
And what goes through your head? I mean, do you get to the point where you start thinking, my agent's falling out with me? Do you get to the point where you start thinking, words got around, people think I'm an absolute see you next Tuesday? I mean, what, I mean, in that course of that year, where do you go with your anxieties? Where do they take you?
I think I think I'm better equipped to deal with something like that now than I would be 5 years ago.
You must still
have
moments where you're like, this is it. I am never going to act again.
Yeah. I remember being around actors quite early on, and they would say things like that to you, like older actors. Like they'd sort of go like, oh, you know, enjoy it, really enjoy it, because, you know, this could be the last one. And feeling like, what are you talking about? I'm going to work forever and ever and ever. But you appreciate it, because obviously you're not living in the moment, you're not enjoying it, you're not sort of thinking like, bloody hell, you know, I don't know when the next job's going to come. I have no idea. Why not just completely enjoy this one and fully be in it and not think two steps ahead?
But that's easy to do when you're working.
Yeah, of course that's easy to do when you're working.
When you're not working and you don't know where the next job's coming from.
Oh, yeah. When you're not working and you don't know where the next job's coming from, you start reading The Secret, you start believing in the law of attraction. you find anything to kind of like...
Do you think about giving up?
Never. No, I don't know how to do anything else.
What's the most difficult thing about being an actor?
Convincing other people sometimes that you're an actor. As in like, oh, what have you been in? I hate that. That's probably the worst question ever. I hate that question.
What do you do for a living?
I'm an actor.
All right, what have you been in?
Just go and die. That's it. It's kind of, just get it out of the way quick.
Yeah.
But it is
Do you have a lot of friends?
Awkward.
Do you have a lot of friends that aren't actors?
Pretty much all my friends aren't actors.
And does that mean then they've got to the point now where they know the deal, they know sometimes you're working, sometimes
Yeah, I mean, they get surprised. Like, I met up with a really, really good friend recently who's living in London now, but we're sort of besties since we were three in Nottingham. And, you know, I told him about the year that I'd had out, because I'd sort of withheld that information. But I told him about it, and, you know, it's still shocking and surprising, like a whole year. Like, wow.
We talked a bit about that idea of during that year, I asked, have you considered giving up?
Mm.
And, you know, you, like a lot of people, have said, well, you don't, there's nothing else that's obvious to you.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had friends, say, from East 15, who have given up?
Yeah.
Are we talking a lot of people?
A lot. But that sort of goes with East 15 in a way, because it's a great drama school, but obviously in terms of, you know, the league table, the Premier League of drama schools, it's maybe in the relegation zone or just above it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's terrible. That's awful. Like a lot of actors who I would consider, you know, are just in a different league to me. Amazing. Aren't doing it anymore from my year. They're not doing it.
Why is that?
Because, nobody came to the showcase. They didn't feel like they necessarily had, maybe they didn't have the wherewithal to sort of really chase it. I don't know.
This is going to be a really difficult question, and I'm sorry for asking it, but it's thrown itself up, so I'm seizing it with
Go.
Both hands. If those guys, and you may just be being kind, are people who you think are much, much better than you are, or certainly had a more instinctual, natural ability or whatever.
Yeah.
If they weren't able to get there, why did you get there?
I got lucky.
How important is luck?
Hugely. In my last year at drama school, my photo, because that's when you sort of get put on Spotlight towards the end, they sort of register you with Spotlight and then you're there. I must have turned up in some search, the casting director, you know, she obviously found me and suddenly thought, yeah, this guy. And she put me in touch with agents. So I instantly had a great in, and that was just unheard of at East 15. But all purely luck, just luck.
We've established, I think, earlier in the interview that it's harder you said that, you know, there's a smaller pool of Asian actors, but there's also a lot less work. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to be selective, then it makes it a hell of a lot more difficult for you. Mm-hmm. Do you think at that very early selection phase there was any advantage for you in standing out and being different because of your ethnicity?
Massively so. Massively so. And I think, I even remember one of the teachers at East 15 telling me that, pulling me to one side and sort of saying, like, you know, it will work both ways. She told me, you know, it'll work both ways, but right now, you know, it's a really, really positive thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't give up, as in, like, get past these first few things, you know, because it's a good and bad thing, but hopefully there'll be more good than bad. But, man, actors just anyway, you know, it's hard, isn't it?
Do you consider yourself successful? You knew that was coming. We talked about it before I started press record. You knew that
was coming. And I'm going to say no.
Because you know what the next question is as well, which is, if, you know, that guy who turned up to audition for East 15, assuming he would get in, and he's a confident kid on that basis, if you were to show him your CV, in his naivety, might he think, doing pretty good?
Yeah, he would, completely. Completely he would.
Do you think that'd be naive, though?
I think it would, yeah, at the time. At that time, he'd think, yeah, this is great.
The kind of last question, before the last question, I think they call it the penultimate question in educated circles. Do you worry more about your health, your work, or your financial security?
My health. My health, work, financial security.
Are you in anything at the minute?
Oh, thankfully, yes, I am.
Right at this minute?
Not at this minute. I'm finished.
You see what happened there? You see what happened there?
Oh, is that not what you meant?
Okay. So I'll ask it again. Are you in anything at the minute?
Technically, no. Technically, no, even though I just finished filming last week.
Listen, yeah. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I really appreciate your time. Thanks
no problem,
much.
Man. Thank you.
Cheers.
That's it from me for another fortnight. In the meantime, keep an eye out online for the very first episode of the brand new Emerging Actors Roundtable. I'm working on that at the moment with the guys at Spotlight, and we're hoping the very first step will be ready to go out in the next few weeks. Please also, like I said at the top of the episode, leave a rating and a review on iTunes if you haven't done so already and you're a fan of the podcast. Also, you can consider following us on Twitter at Honest Actors, liking the page on facebook.com/Honest Actors, and you can read loads of blogs on the website at inanything.com. Like I said last time, there hasn't been some new ones for a while, but we're hoping to change that very soon. Some good news on that front in the coming weeks too. Speak to you soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.